Welcome to the Euro Digital Partners Insights podcast. I'm Sean Patterson. Today, I'm joined in person by a dear friend from my studio in Prague, Czech Republic, Giacomo Mercandelli. Thanks for joining the Euro Digital Partners Insights podcast.
Hi, Sean. Hi, everybody. Thank you for having me here.
Giacomo, we chat with you as you're working to end a chapter of your life in Prague. I guess we should figure out, how did you end up in Prague?
That was very random, actually. It was not really one of my targets. I came here just to visit one of my best friends who was living in Prague. He's half English, half Italian. And he was working for a company that was dealing with supply chain finance, an American company that is actually that also has an office here in Prague, Czech Republic. He asked me whether I actually wanted to join that company. And yeah, I accepted. So that's how I remained. And I've been working there for 4 years.
So like so many expats in the Czech Republic, you came here for work rather than, say, love.
Yeah, they come here for work or for love. Yes. Or because they saw Prague, they fell in love with the city, and then they decided to stay.
Yeah.
Well, to me, it was really like just for work. And honestly, at the beginning, I was even undecided because I was like, you know, since I left my job like 2 months ago and I just stayed 1 month in Brazil, why not traveling more? You know, so Prague to me was just one of the few trips that I had programmed, that I had planned. But yeah, but it turned out to be my new home.
So you expected to stay a short time and you ended up being here quite a lot longer.
That's correct. I expected to stay a month maximum and I stayed 4 years and a half.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's how life is. So I guess first things first, you come from Italy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where in Italy?
Milan. Well, I guess nobody's perfect. I'm sorry.
No. Milan versus Prague must be quite different.
It is quite different.
I mean, how would you compare and contrast?
Especially if you consider that after Milan, I was living in Rimini, which is like one of the most touristic cities in Italy. And right before coming to Prague, I was in Brazil, which has a very welcoming and happy culture.
Right.
I would say that the biggest contrast lies in the culture. Like, here, people are more serious, I would say. You know, like, you have the impression that people care about practical things. And that's it. There's not much. My feeling at the beginning was that there was not much courtesy. I was feeling weird thinking that paradoxically I had to be nice to the waiter or he would be mad at me, you know, right. and things like this. You just need to get used to it. I think the main difference is that we perceive them as cold.
Yeah.
And they perceive us Latins as fake, you know, because we're always like super friendly. Yeah, add me on Facebook. Let's meet tomorrow. And then we disappear.
Sure.
And they don't want to be fake like us.
Yeah.
So they tend to be very honest and not hypocrites. That is correct. But sometimes on our side, this might be perceived as a very cold culture or not welcoming culture. So that was the main difference, I would say, that I perceived at the beginning.
Just the primary interaction that you were always going to have where you are interacting with the people that are in service. So the waiters, the hotel staff. I mean, that's automatically going to be giving you a different perspective than maybe somebody who's working here and has to deal with a whole host of other issues. Could be anything from housing to healthcare to et cetera that you wouldn't have to deal with.
I mean, you understand that you're American. In
True.
America, everybody has to be super polite, you know, this
right,
35
yeah.
teeth smile.
Yeah.
Because you need to win over a client, you know.
Sure.
Paradoxically, here, the mentality, I think it comes from communism, is more like, you client me the service that I am providing. So if you want that, you'd better behave well.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So you were here in Prague. How long before you got some work?
I was offered the job when I was here on holiday. So
okay.
They sent me the contract like 1 day after I had the interview.
Yeah, okay. You were still in Prague.
I was still in Prague.
Wow, okay.
But they asked me to come back before from Brazil. Because I had a return flight from Brazil on February, and they asked me to come here on the 14th of January 2016. And I started working on the 15th of January 2016. So I just changed my flight tickets after accepting the offer. And the day after I moved here, I started working.
Yeah, well, they didn't mess around. So you started with a company called Prime Revenue?
Yes.
Okay. What is the raison d'etre for Prime Revenue? What are they trying to achieve?
I gotta be honest. I was very interested about the idea behind Prime Revenue, because before I had a job in Italy for 3 years for a Spanish company that was dealing with carbon credits and monitoring CO2 plants and so on, CO2 monitoring plants and so on. So I've been visiting companies and factories all around Italy for 3 years. And most of these companies had always the same problem. Their problem was, I'm working well, but if people who are supposed to pay me are not paying me on time, how am I supposed to run my business? I have to pay taxes on the invoices that I'm issuing, and I'm not receiving money for those invoices. So it's getting very frustrating to run the business.
Accounts payable is a real problem.
That's correct. And in Italy, you also have like account payables that are like 150, 180 days. How are you supposed to run a business if you're getting paid after 6 months?
So the standard isn't like 180 days. It's incredible.
You don't have many certainties, and
but,
I understand.
But you don't have like, you know, like 5 net 30 or something like this. It's not like...
Nah. And the point is that there's also some kind of mistrust in dealing with new people in those markets, because the legal system doesn't work very well, or it can take very long. Mm-hmm. That's a difference that I noticed when I was working with Brits or Germans or Scandinavians. Like, if something is written in a contract, it has to be respected. But in Southern European countries, it's more like, we know that the legal system takes a long time, costs a lot, is not really efficient, so I'd rather deal with somebody that I know well. So they give more importance to actually knowing people in person. So it takes more time to gain their trust.
Sure.
That's one of the issues that I found out at the beginning of my job. But I thought that this solution, and now we'll talk about what Prime Revenue does, was a good solution for all the Italian companies that I was visiting before. That's why I thought it was interesting to join that the Prime Revenue. So I thought it would provide a nice solution to their problems. And as a matter of fact, it did.
Yeah, I imagine when you're trying to, you know, you obviously have many different kinds of companies. You have companies that are very stable and maybe they're more established, and maybe they don't need to be paid quite on time, but they can be a little bit late. But you must have other companies that they literally, if they don't get paid on time, they have to shut the doors. So what is the company that has to look out for late payments? You know, like, what does that company look like? How do you know if you're a company leader, maybe? Or let's say you're an investor and you want to invest in a stable company and not have to worry about whether payments happen on time for these guys. Is there some indication that you look to say, this company is one that gets all of their invoices paid on time and another one doesn't? I mean, is there some sort of rule of thumb in this area?
But that's exactly the point. Like, first, we need to distinguish about two kinds of companies, because in Prime Revenue, we were dealing with companies who were buying from other companies, so customers,
sure,
and suppliers, which usually deal with raw materials or food or so on.
Right.
The ones that are buying from the suppliers are the ones that are willing to extend the payment terms, of course, because they're the ones that have to pay the invoices. The real problem, right, especially in Southern European countries, is you never really have a certainty. So technically, they are supposed to pay you after 150 days. But practically, you never know if this is happening. And I feel like the benefits that they can have from the system are different, because one wants to pay later and the other one wants to get the money earlier. So on the supplier side, the advantage that they can get is like, who doesn't want to have cash before? Whether you want to invest, buy new machinery, or whether you want to close the financial year or the financial quarter, it just changes your balance sheet. But on the buyer side, it's just about really improving their position in the market compared to their competitors, so that they can improve their DPO or DSO.
What are the kinds of businesses where it has typically made sense to have these long payment terms?
I guess the point is like facing the reality, because like, I never heard of a business that is paid right away, to be fair. I mean, every supplier, whatever they were providing, whatever service they were providing, whether it was just transportation or raw materials or cleaning services or consultancies, I think consultancies were the only ones that were paid immediately, to be fair.
Hmm.
Technically, there is a European law, European Union law, that says that you can pay up to 60 days after the service has been provided. And I've never heard of a company that pays straight away. they all wait at least these 60 days.
Hmm.
It could happen that you have some virtuous companies that would pay after 30 days. But apart from strict consultancies, never heard of anybody paying straight away.
So what is it that your company does? Because typically, I mean, I guess the way it would work is that if you have to pay somebody, you'd call up the CEO or whoever was in charge of accounts receivable, and you'd say, hey, listen, we can't pay right away. We need an extra 30 days, 90 mm-hmm. days, whatever it mm-hmm. is. What is it that a supply chain finance company like Prime Revenue is actually doing?
Well, every company has a contract. And in that contract with the buyer, and the buyer has a contract with the supplier saying, okay, I'm going to pay all your receivables after 30 days, 60 days. That's agreed between the two companies, okay? Once agreed, this should be the normality.
Yeah.
What usually happens is that to improve their position in the market or whatever for different situations because of difficult times or whatever, the buyer wants to pay the suppliers after the agreed terms. So let's assume that in the contract is written that I have to pay you after 60 days.
Sure.
But I want to pay you after 90 days.
Right.
Of course, I can't just call you and say, you know what, I'm going to pay you 1 month after. So I'm sure you're going to be very upset. And this is going to it's going to affect your business a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
On the other hand, you already have issues in waiting 60 days. You would like to have money before 60 days. Now, here's the solution.
Indeed.
What the buyer proposes you is, I'm going to upload all your receivables on Prime Revenue's platform. Once the receivables are on Prime Revenue's platform, it means that they have already been processed by us and approved, right? Then it's up to you. You can or wait 90 days, because I'm extending the payment terms by 30 days.
Sure.
Or you can trade the invoice to the bank that is financing the program. Now, it depends on the program, of course, but there are different banks that have agreements with Prime Revenue and this buyer.
Got it.
It's a true selling of receivables, 100% no recourse, meaning that if you sell the invoice to the bank buys it and you can close it. So you can close your balance sheet. Okay. Then the risk being no recourse stays between the bank and the buyer. So if something happens after you traded the invoice, nobody can come back and claim anything to you. The bank pays you the money in 24 hours or 48, it depends on the country and the currency.
Sure.
Then the buyer will pay the value of the invoice to the bank. So whether you trade the invoice or not, to the buyer it doesn't really change anything because they will always pay a day 90. But you, on the other hand, if you want, you can get the money before by giving the invoice to the bank.
Right. Okay, got it.
What is interesting about this is that usually the following question on supplier side is, yeah, okay, but how much is this going to cost? Now, that's the interesting thing. The credit rating that is calculated is based on the buyer's credit rating. So the rate is based on buyer's credit rating. So it's not based on SPA, but it's based on Kellogg's or Whirlpool or Heinz or whatever.
Yeah, okay.
So it's going to be very advantageous because the risk is based on the buyer, not on you.
How is it different from factoring?
With the exception that with factoring, first of all, you're connected with only one bank.
Okay.
The good part about Prime Revenue is that we're a multi-banking platform.
Ah, I see.
So, yes, the bank can get crazy and say, you know what? I want to change the rate from 0.9% yearly. I want to change it to 2% yearly. But if they decide to do so, then we tell them, oh, you know what? There's another bank that is just willing to provide the same service with the rate that you have right now. Are you sure you want to do that?
Right. Okay.
First of all. Second of all, with factoring, you have two costs because you have the commission and the interest. With Prime Revenue, you only have the interest, which is always visible in their platform. So when you enter in the platform, you log in and you see all your invoices that have already been approved, number, maturity date, value, how much it would cost for you to trade it in this moment and how much you would receive in your bank account the following business day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's completely transparent. Plus, there is no obligation of trading. With factoring, sometimes you have a contract that says, you know, you have this minimum amount of value or number of invoices that you have to trade every month, for example. With Prime Revenue, you don't. So paradoxically, if you never trade an invoice before the maturity date, you never pay any commission.
Give me some idea, like how common is this practice? How big is the market and how many companies are we talking about? Because it seems like quite advantageous to use this platform if you're not able to pay on time.
It is advantageous because also since you have the no recourse, you have the certainty to be paid. You know,
sure.
There cannot be delay.
Because you're backed by a bank.
Exactly. There's no delay. And if you're connected to only one bank, usually banks, you know, they like to behave like the leaders, you know, like I can decide to change conditions whenever I want because I am the bank.
No, I'm just wondering.
Market and competition, right?
Yeah, well, how big is this market?
Extremely. I think it could be bigger, to be fair, because the problem is with legislations. It takes a long time to have agreements with banks, especially with certain currencies that are very unstable. So, for example, markets like Russia, South America, Africa, don't provide the necessary guarantees, insurance. You're not legally safe to act in those markets, and you cannot provide certainties in the service. So okay. If somebody is able to get some agreements in those countries, perhaps with local banks or governments, that might grow. As for the moment, in America it's very big, because I feel also Anglo-Saxons have this financial mentality.
Sure.
In Europe, there is not much competition to prime revenue. Mm. Yeah, you have some local systems, you have some banks, but the conditions they provide are way inferior, and the system platform is in fact much more backward compared to the one we have in prime revenue. But in Europe, the problem is cultures, I would say.
Not really. Okay.
Because if I would speak about supply chain finance to a British, he would immediately understand what I'm talking about. If I would speak to a supply chain finance with, no offense, but like with a Spanish, that would tend to have a lot of mistrust. You have to work in a different way in different countries in Europe. That's why we had different account executives. Some people were dealing with the North because they were more used to speak with them. Sure. Some people like me were dealing more with Southern Europe. It's not about the way of working. It's more about how much time and effort you have to put in make people understand the advantages of this system. Because, for example, I give you a very, very brief example. The platform can be used two ways, manually or automatically.
Okay.
Everybody in Scandinavia, Netherlands, Great Britain would go automatic. Everybody in Italy, Spain, Portugal, Greece would tell me, Romania would tell me, no, I want to control everything, so I'll keep it manually. But then after 4 months or 5 months, they call me back and they're like, okay, how was the automatic thing? Because I think now I understand it's pretty comfortable. But it took them 5 months to trust the system. They wanted to control it, you know.
Do you see the most usefulness in larger established corporations or a Mittelstadt, kind of mid-sized companies or startups or just mom-and-pop stores? Where do you see this product being more used?
That's the point. It is used in big companies that want to extend their payment terms, and this is some sort of advantage that their suppliers get. On the other hand, I think that there's a lot of companies who might need this more, but it's very difficult to provide the service to them. Companies who need to grow, who are buyers and not suppliers, because they actually need to pay their suppliers afterwards because they cannot afford it and so on, they would love to use this system, but they don't have a good credit rating. So it's very difficult to put them in the platform as buyers because the banks would never accept to provide a satisfactory rate that would be advantageous for their suppliers. This is a big growth field. I think if somebody would manage a platform, because we were working on that, but still they need to be big enough to provide certainties to the banks. But if somebody would be able to provide this sort of system to companies that are at the beginning and need to grow, I think there's a big potential for in this part of the market. I find it difficult to find some financial institution that would actually finance the program without too many certainties. That's the problem. But they are the ones that ask for it the most, but they are the ones that cannot use it.
The reason I bring it up is because I'm just thinking of one company called Brex. And Brex is a startup. They're from Brazil. And their big thing is that we want to provide access to credit cards to other startups. Traditionally, if you have a startup, it's very difficult for you to get access to credit cards. And for a lot of startups, when they're just getting off the ground, they really need that sort of short-term credit with, shall we say, flexible payment terms, that revolving credit line. It's very, very useful for a really early stage startup. It's also very difficult. You know, one of the challenges is it is high risk, so you just don't know. And one of the interesting things about Brex is that they are offering a product which is supposed to deliver zero liability on a personal level, like personal liability of zero to the founders. So if your company just happens to be hit by, say, a pandemic, and you had all this great potential, then, you know, you're not personally liable for something that's not even in your control. But it is, like, of course, like any revolving credit, any credit card, it's going to be a higher percentage than you would ordinarily pay, I assume. Factoring is famously, like, rather
high
expensive.
Risk, use the correct correct words. High risk. Yeah, that's a part of the market that in which I see potential, but unfortunately at the moment I can't think of anybody who's willing to take this risk and invest on this kind of companies. All the companies that are buyers in our platform are already consolidated since years. You know, we're talking about big brands in the US, in Asia, in Europe. But yeah, you're right. The growth is in that part of the market. Somebody has to figure out the solution for this. Because I see these companies, especially startups, calling for funds. But the access for them is way more difficult. And there must be some system. Because, like, tendentially they would go to a bank. But the bank, again, never provides good conditions because they know that they tie you. And you're connected to them. You rely on them.
Sure.
And that is the problem. If there would be a system that manages to put banks in competition, then they might change the structure.
So on this podcast, a lot of what we talk about is marketing, true, but also management and also startups. I'm just wondering, when you get on the phone with somebody, when you deliver a pitch, what's the question that you're asking to focus the conversation to know right away whether the company that you're speaking with is the right one for you? And, like, do you have, like, a go-to question that says, this is the company that I want to be talking to, or is it more nuanced?
It didn't really work this way, in the sense that it was the buyers that were giving me the details of their suppliers to contact.
Ah, okay.
So tendentially, I would call them to say, look, this is what, I don't know, Whirlpool wants to do with you, for example. You know, they want to extend your payment terms. Now, let me tell you what's the solution that they started to do that and why this could be advantages for you. And then I was explaining the advantages, showing the platform and so on. So I was not really hunting for companies in the market.
Right.
There were companies that were contacting me that were not in the platform because they were maybe friend or in the same business or knew the company that is in the park, and they were asking me, like, can I actually join this company? I would love to be part of it. But there had to be suppliers of a company that was already in our platform.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But if I wanted to be buyers, they had to be big enough. You know?
Okay.
So unfortunately, most of the times I had to tell them, you have to ask to your buyer if they want to join our platform. We can talk to your buyer and ask them if they want to be part of this program. And it happened a few times. But it takes time because there's a lot of legal behind, you know, to get agreements with the banks and so on. So it was not that I had a go-to question for hunting. I had mainly these questions that I was expecting from them, you know, on what are my guarantees? Can I see the legal agreement? How can they extend the payment terms to 90 days if European Union says there has to be maximum 60? All these things. What happens if I fail or my buyer fails? What happens if the bank wants to change the rates? Or, for example, suppliers sometimes had a very good credit rating. And they were asking me, like, they were telling me, if I do factoring with the bank, my rate is much better than the one that, I don't know, Sainsbury's is providing me. So why would I actually use the system instead of a normal factory?
Yeah,
then I had to push. I had to push on other things, like you have full visibilities of your credit receivables. You can see the credit memos that are also uploaded in the system, so it doesn't become something that you find out only when you have to receive the money. You know how you can manage it.
Yeah,
it really depended on their needs.
Where do you see this? I mean, realistically speaking, we're in the middle of a pandemic. I would have thought that companies would be really keen to get payment terms extended right now. But does this mean for you more business, or does it mean, I mean, like, what does it mean for this industry?
On the short term, more business. On the long term, it depends how the pandemic goes. Because, for example, imagine a supplier who is in the middle of the pandemic, he's leaving people home, and he's waiting for the government to make some law on how to help them. And they have, like, 1 million in standing receivables that have to be paid in 3 months. In this case, they just trade them immediately. They have all these invoices that are lying in the platform. They just log in the platform. They trade the invoice. And the day after, they have 1 million. So while they wait for the government to do something, they get the fresh cash in their companies to pay the people that they left home or whatever to survive during this time. So it can also be a nice insurance. You know, because a lot of companies might say, yeah, but I don't need it because I'm cash rich. So you're free not to trade. But even if you're cash rich and something like this happens,
right,
then you have this solution and it's already in place. So they didn't have to trade before, so they never paid anything, even if they had an extension of the payment terms, that's true. But now they're covered and the government, for example, in Italy took like 3 months to study a solution on how to help companies. These companies survived 3 months because they had standing receivables that they could trade.
So you see a pretty bright future for supply chain finance?
Absolutely. It could only be growing. I think competitors can grow because in Europe, I'm starting now to see little companies that could be potentially eventually competitors in the future. But still, they're far away from the level of Primavera in Europe. Oh, in America, okay. They do have competitors. In America, Citibank is doing this.
Ah, okay.
Tolly is doing this. But still, Primavera stays on the top of the market, but they have competitors in America. I think, again, yes, it could only grow, but the biggest growth that I see is if somebody manages to provide the service to more little companies and if somebody manages to get into other markets like Brazil or Russia or India or with other currencies.
So the future looks bright for supply chain finance. And tell me, what is the future for Giacomo?
It's easier to answer about the future of supply chain finance. Giacomo is leaving Prague in a few days.
Back to Italy.
Back to Italy at the beginning. Hopefully Canada will invite me soon.
Okay.
That also depends on the pandemic.
Maybe Donald Trump will want to invite you for...
Personally,
lunch at the White House.
I expect a written letter, handwritten letter on his side. Maybe I might join.
I heard he is offering Big Macs at the White House. So that's
nice. Is he? Oh well, then I can join even without the handwritten.
Big Macs letter. And fries. That should work well for your Italian sensibility.
Oh man, I definitely take it. Don't get me wrong.
Okay, well, listeners, I think we'll leave it here. Thanks so much for your time, Giacomo. I wish you all the best.
Thank you, Sean.
That will do it for another edition of the Euro Digital Partners Insights podcast. Find us online at eurodigitalpartners.com/insights. And for comments or suggestions for future episodes, email us at info@eurodigitalpartners.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. We're there at EU Digital P. Finally, please leave a 5-star review for us on iTunes and wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. So that's it. Thanks again for subscribing. I'm Sean Patterson with Giacomo Mercandelli in Prague. Bye-bye.
Bye.